If there's something I need, I don't already have. I know I'll get it from a good friend. If there's something I need, I don't already have. I know I'll get it from a good friend. Hi, everybody. It's Jamie Lee Curtis, and you're listening to the Good Friend Podcast, presented to you by iHeartRadio. It's a podcast about friendship. We talk about everything. We cry, we laugh, we think about what it really means to be a good friend. And I have conversations with some of my best friends, some people I've never met, and sort of everything in between. So I hope by the end of it that you have a really good sense of what friendship means to me and the people that I consider friends. And I hope you can take those same ideas into your own friendship groups. And I hope you enjoy it. Well, this is a first, really a first for me in many ways. I'm new at this podcast game. Although I'm playing it imperfectly, and I am happy, very happy to be doing it because I'm having conversations with people that I love and that I respect, some strangers and some people I am married to, which is the current moment. My guests today are a twofer. My husband, Christopher Guest, is there.
Hello.
And his friend and my friend, David Nickturn.
Greetings.
And we are going to have a conversation about friendship, sort of, obviously, your guys' friendship, mostly. And then how the three of us sort of interact and intersect, and how Dave and I have gone off in a couple tangents and come back. It should be flowy and easygoing, and I'm not trying to be a hard-hitting journalist here, and I'm not going to go for a gotcha moment. So obviously, none of the people listening to the Good Friend Podcast know much about your friendship, the two of you, and why I would choose to do the two of you together. So I know a little bit about this, but I would love to hear from each of you sort of your first memories of how you met, where you met, and what your first impressions of each other were. So I'll start with Dave. I just think it's better to start with you, David. So tell us, this new group of friends for you, a little bit about how you met Mr. Guest and when and where and, you know, the sort of time and place and setting, if you would.
So as we go back through the veils of time, which we have to do, the origin story is that my mom introduced Chris's parents to each other.
Oh,
maybe you didn't know that, Jamie. I don't know if you knew that.
I actually had not remembered that.
Yeah.
And, you know, Dave, we were just talking that Chris's mother, who died, I think, 4 years ago, would have been 100 years old just the other day.
Wow.
So yeah, I did not remember that, but that's interesting.
And then we were born 2 weeks apart, which is also an intriguing fact. He came first on February 5th, 1948, and 2 weeks later, I was born on February 19th. So we've literally had kinship or friendship or the potential of it since literally the day of birth.
Wow.
That's a very, I don't have anybody else even near to that kind of, you know, parameter. Now, as to when we first met, I think I'm going to have to say we first met before even my memory worked.
Mm-hmm.
So,
sure.
You know, I have early memories, but I don't know if I have going back to, like, I'm sure we hung out when we were 3 months old, but I don't remember that. But I do remember a lot of childhood memories, and we definitely had visits that were our families coming together, and so we could we hung out.
I don't think, Dave, that when you're 3 months old, you're hanging out. Uh-oh. I think what's happening is you're lying on your back, you're pooping in a diaper, theoretically, and you just have a glazed expression. I mean, I can't speak for you. That's what I was enjoying doing. Well, but we don't know. We don't know.
Looking up to you because you were the elder.
I was saying, is that kid going to stop pooping in his diaper there and start talking to me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it took this long.
Well, I'm glad to be the facilitator for the post-pooping talk because it's yielded some deep stuff. Mr. Guest, what earliest memories of David and that experience, if you have them?
The earliest memory, we were told as kids what the beginning was, which is not a real memory. It's a memory of someone telling you what happened. And what they told us was that we were in school together at the age of 4. And there was an apparent incident, not the kind of incident that would be in the newspapers, theoretically, but where, tell me if I'm wrong, Dave, that you were in a situation, I don't know if you were being teased, and that I came in to the rescue, basically.
Yeah, I think I was having my butt kicked.
Well, that's what I was trying to say.
And you said, all right, boys,
well,
that'll be enough.
What I said was, as the cops in New York say, okay, the show's all right. So the other 4-year-olds backed away in fear. Of course, I don't remember that. I don't think David remembers that, but we were told that. And it may or may not be true. I don't have any memories of much of anything at that time. I remember the school. The first memory of David as a person, well, it's interesting because I think it was probably when we started to play music together. We were about 13, I'm guessing. Is that accurate, Dave, roughly?
Yeah, but I can go back way further than that, 8 maybe. Uh-huh. And your apartment is on Waverly Place. And the walls were close enough in the hallway that we could climb the walls. Do you remember that? We'd put our feet out and our hands out. We could kind of climb up the walls.
Well, we meaning me. Yeah. Yeah. It was something that I could do. I could go up to the ceiling.
That's right.
And then I would show people, and then whether or not you got to the ceiling and rang the little bell and came down, I don't know. I don't know, but I take your word for it. I mean, I remember climbing the walls. So
yeah.
Well, the reason I bring it up is, you know, as Chris said, and I think it's appropriate, you know, what are memories that were told to you by your parents? You know, you guys were such good friends. You loved each other so much. But as Chris just said, the real connective tissue, the thing that actually has created the relationship that has carried you through a lot of time is music. That was the first connection. And how, like, I know that's going to sound, you know, unsophisticated, but is it just that you have a guitar, Chris, and you're playing something and Dave comes over and says, that's cool, I like that, I do this? Or like, I'm curious, because it has to start somewhere. Do you have any memory of how that happened?
No. I don't. And some of this is feeling like it's, even though David pointed out that the families were seeing each other when we were younger, that the lasting memory comes from playing music together. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And how that happened, I also couldn't say, but I think independently, and I don't even know how this happened, we both started listening to a specific kind of music, which was arcane in the most part. It wasn't rock and roll. It wasn't regular folk music that was happening. It was bluegrass music, and that was not very popular, ultimately. But we fell in love with it at about the same time, and it really was a powerful thing. So that when we got together and played, that's what we would typically play.
Well, friendship is born usually out of some shared thought, idea, feeling, activity. It's rare to just sort of become super tight with somebody without some connection.
Yeah.
Do you remember that music, Dave? Do you remember anything specific about that?
I was thinking today about friendship because you sent me the cup that said friends on it. And I know that's the motif of your podcast.
Yeah.
And then I started thinking, well, what is friendship? And I came to the same conclusion. It's a shared experience. It's like a joint bank account into which certain experiences go. And it's true. I came up when I was thinking about Chris. There were so many musical moments along the way. And it was we shared this esoteric interest in bluegrass music, which was, you know, not the common thing in New York City at the time. Although there was a kind of focused cloister of people who were into it. And so I don't have that many friends throughout my life who even know who Bill Monroe is, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and not only do we know who Bill Monroe is, but we know who played banjo with him in 1960, whatever. You know, so the specifics of that, and then we could play that music, we could render that music. So I have pictures of us when we were 15 of me playing banjo and Chris playing guitar. I have a picture at my house of that.
Maybe you'll send me that picture.
It might be in my apartment. So if I get in there, I will. I've been.
If you ever get to go back to your apartment,
go back,
you ever go back to New York City.
Definitely.
Well, I think this joint account, this joint bank account of experiences, of influences, of chemistry that, you know, connects and grows and pulses. It's really a live thing. But I love the idea because it also means you can be out of. It's a shared account, but that doesn't mean you don't go off and have your own life and the other life. I think that's what's beautiful about dropping into friendship, because certainly so far on the podcast, you're the longest relationship that I think I will probably talk to or think about, which is this longevity of a friendship. But most of the conversations I've already had have to do with the idea of dropping in and out of friendship, that it's not this big, just continual river of incredible depth and connection, that it's the nature of life, that people go off and then they come back and then they go off and then they come back. But music was the connection for you guys and continues to be.
There's so many moments. There's a lot of through moments. We had a rock and roll band in college together called Voltaire's Nose. What's the name of it? And, you know, we've done music projects together and right up to the present day. And I think I'm looking at your house there, and Chris and I usually sit in your kitchen, which is one of the best sounding rooms there is. And we play until COVID happened. We would sit there and play mandolin, guitar, and you know, that gave birth to certain music projects that we did together. So yeah, music's a big thread, I think. And shtick is the other one, probably.
Yeah.
Well, then that gets into the, as we were discussing a week or so ago, Dave, the straight man premise, which is in comedy, at least in comedy teams, there's a straight man and then there's another. And this isn't a sexual thing. It's someone who sets up jokes, and then there's a person who's ostensibly funny. But when Dave says shtick, Dave is, as I explained to him just recently, a natural straight man. And that's a very hard thing to come by, just born straight man. I had to tell him that. He didn't know that. See, you don't get a letter from any agents, government agency, saying you've been anointed a straight man. But Dave has always been a very good straight man.
What makes a good straight man, Mr. Guest?
Well, it's very hard. It's one of the hardest things to do. It's hard to, I think there's a selflessness about it. There's a sense of what the hell just happened here. why is the other person saying that? Why are they laughing? Maybe some of those things are part of it.
Well, it's music, right? It's the way music goes, where someone plays one part of the music and then there's another part of the music. I mean, it's a relationship, a straight man and a shticker, somebody who does the comedy. You can't have one without the other. That's what makes it so good.
Well, I would, in my work, whatever that is, I would not think of my, I would think of myself as sort of in between, mm-hmm. but for whatever that's worth.
We'll be right back with more Good Friend after this quick break, so stick around. I want to go back to Voltaire's nose for a minute. John Carpenter, when I knew him, when we first met, and he was just 30, and he and Tommy Wallace and Nick Castle was the guy behind the mask. Tommy Wallace was the production designer, and I think also did props on the original 1978 Halloween movie, which was made for, you know, $300,000 in 20 days, or 17 days, actually. They had a band, and their original band was the Coupe de Villes. And they were a garage rock and roll band, and sort of did covers. And I think they probably had some original music. Did Voltaire's Nose, did you guys do covers, or did you do your own stuff?
We did both.
Mostly covers.
We did both. So
I can't remember what the original stuff would have been. It was parties. I know there were some fraternity parties at Columbia kind of parties where it was, it's a challenging thing. It's mainly young kids drinking, and we were probably, how old, 20, Dave, I would guess.
Sure. I graduated from Columbia when I was 20, Chris, so it might have even been like 18 or 19.
Could have been younger.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy to just say those numbers and you know 18 and 19 year olds today and you're like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Like you just said, yeah. 18 and 19. I can't even imagine.
It was, and we played some outside things. I don't remember how those were secured, those gigs, but it was an electric band, but I don't remember what the original songs would have been.
I remember one song, I Don't Want a Part-Time Woman. I don't know how the hell I remember that. And I don't know why I would be thinking that at 18 either, but I'm pretty sure that was the name of an original song we did.
Wow. I would love to hear that.
Yeah, it's that early thing of going through different things for musicians. You're also going through the guitar thing, the actual what guitar are you playing thing. And that's a very big thing through people's lives. It sounds like kind of just a materialistic thing, but it's when you're young and you see players that you like, hear players that you like, you clock what instruments they're playing. It's a very powerful thing. So for me, Mike Bloomfield was playing a Les Paul guitar for the most part. And B.B. King was playing a 335. And you wanted to emulate that. I did. As if that was going to be some kind of magic thing. Dave and I, Dave had a black guitar, maybe a 350 or 340.
No, it was a 330. I still have it.
Wow.
Gibson 330.
And I had a 335. We both had Martin D28s. And that all becomes part of the same thing, you know, of who's playing what the sound of something is. And it's part of that.
Well, it's a language from my standpoint, when I look at particularly men in relationship, you know, women just by nature sort of talk more about things as they kind of first couple up and start exploring young life, young creative lives. And I'm not saying that women musicians aren't going to have the similar thing, but you guys are musicians and that is in itself a language. And I have been privy to it in our, as you said, the studio in our home, just the acoustics in the kitchen. But I've never not seen you guys play music. There's just never been a time where the two of you are in a room not playing music. I've also gone to bed listening to you guys talk. Your long friendship, David, for the uninitiated, is a lifelong Buddhist. I mean, since you were in your teens, yeah?
20.
Okay. I pulled 20 out of my ass. Look at that. You know, you've been dedicated to a very specific path and teaching, and you are a teacher, you are a student. It has been a very, very big part of your life. And Christopher has obviously been a musician, but he's also gone off and made movies and done many other activities. Most people don't know his most current passion. It really is the intricate tying of these little flies for fly fishing, which he spends and practices really in the execution of them. He spends quite a long amount of time daily in that practice. But both of you have dedicated your lives to a practice of something. You both play music. Christopher practices his instruments on a daily basis, Chris?
Yeah.
And that's something that I think the two of you have shared in your friendships. It's the way you guys play music together is, in a way, a language between you two. And when you do improvisational music, it is the jazz conversation between the two of you. And one goes off one place and then somebody else, and then you come back, then you join up again, then you go off. And I was thinking about that because I've known the two of you, and you've both gone off and done a lot of things. Has there been times where your focus in this other world has taken you kind of off and you've had to find your guys' way back? Because there have been period of time, David, where I didn't see you as often. And then there have been times where I've seen a lot of you.
Well, I think, and I don't know the exact timeline of this, but when David graduated college, there was a separation, basically. I don't know if you moved. Did you go to Colorado? Did you go?
What happened was I think probably we were still in contact. We were both playing around the village, you know, for a while. And then I went back to music school, to Berklee College of Music. And during that year, that was 1970, I met my Buddhist teacher. Mm-hmm. And then I got very involved with that. Then you and I were both out in California different times, but I lived in LA. And then I was the director of a meditation center in Vermont for a couple of years. So mm-hmm. during that time, I was pretty drawn, also starting my family. And so there was a gap there. And what actually happened, Chris, is I had a lucid dream with you in it. When I came back to, I guess I came back to New York, and I just kind of, you know, had a very strong feeling of connection, and I called you up. And then I came out, and during that time, during those years, Jamie, is when Chris and you were getting mm-hmm. together. Mm-hmm. So then when I came out to LA, that next time we had a visit, and then I met you, Jamie. And then I think from then on, though, we've been, you know, pretty much in contact as every time I come to Los Angeles, we're hanging out, you know, and visiting. So that would have been, how many years ago would that have been, born? That would
35. Have been
about, yeah. Yeah. So you guys have been together a long time.
We've been together 36 years.
Wow. Oh, because you know what? You had a cake in the freezer. You had your wedding cake in the freezer for a year.
It's still in the freezer.
But I you shared a piece with me.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's when I met you, Jamie. That's however many, that's 35 years ago.
Right.
36 wow. years ago.
Yeah. Well, for the listening audience, I've been married to Mr. Guest for all of that time. And, you know, the cake in the freezer thing is the kind of old fashioned, like you get married and then you take a piece of your cake and then you freeze it. And on your first anniversary, I think you have a bite of it. You know, I did the throwing the thing.
What's the thing?
Come on, help me out. Where you get married, Stitch. You have flowers. No flowers in your hand. Your bouquet. And my pregnant...
But you caught your own bouquet. So what does that
no,
mean?
No, I didn't catch my own bouquet. My pregnant, unmarried sister caught the bouquet.
Great.
Yeah.
That's a good line right there.
Yeah, that's a good opening really line good for a book.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that's good.
But yes, but I'm, you know, we're, I would say we're traditional that way. And, you know, this podcast came from a song, Dave. I don't know if you got to hear my theme song, but I will, for everyone else has heard it because they tuned in and heard it. It's called Good Friend by Emily King. Uh-huh. I thought I connected it on the bottom of the email to you. Anyway, the point is that I just lost the point. Hold on. I'll find it. It'll come back.
Traditional, conventional.
Oh, traditional. Thank you. Yeah. Because I think there are traditional mores in friendships. There are traditional ideas. And what I've loved about you guys as friends is that it's fairly non-traditional. Like I say traditional in the kind of classic dude, my experience of a classic dude friendship. Like it's you speak musically to each other. It's always amazing when you see each other. There's never been a time where I haven't gone to sleep and woken up 3 hours later, you guys are still talking. Huh. Like it's
some of that in all fairness is pre-recorded. Because we're watching a movie basically, but it sounds better to have a what sounds like a philosophical discussion. So that's playing and we're in another room watching TV basically. But okay. No, we talk a lot and we still talk a lot and we talk on the phone. I'd say it's those two things. Yeah.
And if we could come back to the straight man thing for just a moment.
Please.
Here's my interpretation of it. And it's a basketball analogy. If we were a basketball team, I would be the point guard and I'm kind of setting up the play. And Chris is a tall forward. He's cutting to the hoop. I'm lobbing the ball up in slow motion. It's hovering above the rim. And he absolutely, without fail, black belt style, is going to leap, catch the ball, turn around, twist, do a 360 and dunk it. Every single
if it, we would if call that an assist.
If the hoop is 7 feet high, yes, that's what I would be doing. I'm not getting anywhere near there if it's too high for that. Well, that's a very interesting way of putting it. I think it's thank you. Thanks for the setup. Thanks for the pass.
Well, and if Chris is on your team, you want him to shoot. Right, Jamie, you know, people all over the world want him to take that shot.
I think that, well, if it's set up well, I think we want you to take the shot, Chris. Yeah. I mean, the thing that's always not surprising to me, but is the beauty of the long relationship we've had is that, you know, Chris can drop me with no warning. So yeah. it's the facility for maybe I'm an easy target. I mean, I am a fairly easy target.
Me too.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, but isn't that really a big draw in a friendship? See, I want in my friendships, I want to be seen and heard. I want people to know me well and be able to drop me to my knees in laughter when I don't see it coming, when I'm, you know, the best thing with Chris for us is that when I'm so mad, I can't be mad because all Chris has to do is adjust his face. And no matter how angry I am, no matter what the issue is, I'm done. And it's you can't in recovery. I heard once that you can't hate someone and pray for them at the same time.
Oh,
you know, you can't, it's not possible. Because one is turning over some feeling about them that they are safe, a little meta prayer, you know, like a little, you can't do a meta prayer and be like really incensed at somebody at the same time. They are counter-purposing. And so in that sense, it's anyway, it's been something that has occurred with my husband and I for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you guys introduce each other to other people? You know, that's another thing in friendships is that friendship groups grow and spread. Has that occurred with you guys?
Dave visited us in our country place and met some of the friends that Jamie and I have, several friends. But I don't think I have met David's friends now other than people that we both knew from a long time ago.
Well, and I thought of Chris one thing right away, which is there's a couple of things that we both are pretty tuned into. And a lot of our conversation revolves around kind of two poles of how screwed up things are out in the world and why and how did it get that way? And also that against that backdrop, there's this almost miraculous onslaught of talented young musicians and artists and creators. And so I just thought when you said that, I thought right away of Julian Lage, who Chris made friends with and then mm-hmm. introduced me to, and we became friends and musical friends too. And he's also a meditator. So, you know, so that is a shared passion that we have is an amazement that we have that in the darkness of these dark ages, that there's these young beings emerging with so much light and so much talent and so much to give and offer. So I think that's a thread. There's a theme there.
Well, it's sure. Isn't it the, I mean, that's the evolution. I mean, you hope that there are some bright lights to, and that if you can be a conduit, I know you have been involved at Berkeley. I know Christopher was on their board for a long, long time and, you know, has been very focused on young people and how to help them, because nobody really understands. Like, you go to a music school like that, but can they teach you the reality of what the music business is today? Which is, you know, you don't want to be a dream buster, but it's a really complicated world. And I know Chris really focused on that to try to help people and also to connect them with instruments to be able to have something that then they get to go off and create their light, as you just referred to it. So I think, obviously, there's a, you know, that's to me the evolutionary force of musical friendship, which is what I would call your guys' friendship, which is a musical friendship.
But there's this other pole, and Chris can speak to it. But, you know, I, as I know you guys do, have a wide array of friendships. And Chris is almost reminds me of the kind of scholar sage of days gone by. You know, he's studied. He's read a lot about history. He has a perspective that's deeper than the kind of shallow perspective, and he's looking at current events against that backdrop. And it's erudite, and it's somebody that I listen to, you know, talking about current events against that backdrop. And you know, maybe a lot of people don't know that about him. I don't know if they do or they don't. He's a scholar,
but that's part of the connective tissue to you.
Yeah, I'm interested in those things too, from a slightly different perspective.
I wouldn't say, I have to jump in and say, I'm not a scholar in the literal sense. I read a lot, but I'm not a scholar. There are people who have read 100 books about a given time period. I do like to read about history and be informed about that.
Yes, but what David is saying, obviously, is that as a friend, I mean, it's a podcast called Good Friend, the gift for him is that you're someone with that kind of scholarly but what you do is that you then distill the world today and apply what you've read and learned of why we are where we are. And I've obviously been married to you for a very long time, and we are as opposite as two people can be in that way, because I'm somebody who can look at the big picture and get the picture of it and can still distill quite a lot. I don't have to read the fine details to get basically the idea. And I mean, it's an example of our partnership, Chris, because you actually get into the weeds of things.
Yes. And I guess David's weeds are in the work that he does. Everyone has their own weeds, hopefully, because
everyone
if you don't,
weeds.
Then you're just being a superficial person.
Yeah.
So maybe when we talk, that's what we end up talking about, the idea of weeds. For me, that's the most interesting thing. And to some people, it would be not of any interest because it's arcane in some way. But for me, the more arcane, the more interesting it is to me. And I think when David speaks to people about what he does, if he's speaking to people about meditation who are not meditators, there's a different way of speaking to them than for someone who is. There has to be a way to bridge that, I guess. If you have some knowledge, you can't just jump in to the deep end right away. But you have to find a way as friends to have a common point which reflects both of the things, I guess. If there's something I need, I don't already
have, I know I'll get it from a good friend. We'll be right back with more Good Friend after this quick break. You know, there are some friendships that envelop each other where there is no penumbra. It's just not there. It's so enmeshed, so without kind of boundaries that you can't almost discern one from the other and to try to extricate. And what I love about that as a theme is that in a way, the three of us have that. There's a part of our relationship. David and I have collaborated on my children's books. David has written music for my children's books. I am not a Buddhist, but as Dave might say, but I can play one on TV. But at the same time, without any of the knowledge base of Buddhism, without any of the study, I still do have a practice that is Buddhism light, is some, I don't know, essence of it, because we've talked about it, both on your podcasts and talking about my own practice as a sober woman and how I've tried to bring some sort of a spiritual life, some feeling to my own life so that and that's that connective tissue. Because our circles, my husband and I have that. You know, we are a pair of opposites, and we both can operate in that opposite sphere very healthily without
contact. You're a matched pair of opposites.
We are a matched pair of opposites. But where we connect, our children, our marital life, our physical life together, sexual as well as physical, in time and place and location, and a shared love of nature, a love of small animals, a shared, you know, the connective tissue is strong with us, which has meant that we can withstand the 36-year journey together, while both operating in very other big, exciting, creative, passionate other spheres. And I'm happy, very happy to be having this conversation, because you've known each other a long time. Chris and I have known each other a long time, and you and I have known each other a long time. And that connective little dot in the middle is what this episode is really about, which is how do you have that other life, but then still come here? When you guys haven't seen each other in a while, it never feels that there's any sense of having to find your way back with each other. One of you just picks up a guitar and starts to play something, and the next thing you know, you're singing harmony. Yeah?
Can you repeat that? Yes. No, that's... I think that's true. There doesn't feel like there's now we have to kind of go over this to reestablish whatever this is. No, I think that in the last year, it's been strange for everyone that everyone's relationships outside of marriages or boyfriend and girlfriend or girlfriend and boyfriend or whatever it is, have been tested by this social separation. But I've talked to David on the phone on a fairly regular basis. I mean, there are times where a month could go by when we don't speak, but it doesn't feel like, well, who is this again when he calls or when I call?
Right. Now, you don't have the more physical pursuits that you share, Dave. Am I correct?
I'll answer for him because he wants me to. Well, I do, we have part of the separation is that David has his practice, his Buddhist practice, his teaching, which I'm not a part of. He's talked about it, but I'm not a part of that. I have a life, a physical life, whether it's fly fishing or skiing or hiking or golf, that is different. And that those are things that we actually don't share, but we share the other things. So.
Well, and I don't like friends who do exactly what I do. I'm not drawn very much to that usually. Ooh. So the idea of being able to adsorb, you know, somebody else's experience. So when Chris is talking about fly fishing or skiing, I'm very interested in hearing him talk about it. Because it's and I'm also interested in finding threads through it. For example, he talked about his relationship with his ski instructor, which almost like a kind of serious mentoring relationship, as I understood it, and it had principles that were very similar to like studying Buddhism or something like that.
Well, there are connections with all of this when I've described to you and to other people as well, but the feeling of being alone in the wilderness, where literally alone, of camping out by a river in the bottom of a canyon somewhere, and you're hearing different birds, or you're hearing coyotes at night or wolves or whatever. And for me, that is my version of a meditation. It's obviously not a practice in the way David does it, but that is a connective tissue that becomes something we can talk about where it's relatable, I guess.
Well, I think that is just a really interesting aspect of your friendship, about your good friendship, is that you don't share a lot of those. Music, yes, but that these other worlds, as you said, Dave, Chris knows about things and is interested in things that you're not, and he brings that into your life. And then, as you said, you find a little thread that jives with something that you're doing, and vice versa with Chris. He doesn't do what you do. And you're right. It, a lot of people, I think, would say that they connect as you did with music, but that connection then stays all the way through their lives. And as I said before, that they're so enmeshed that it's hard to separate them. You both have very specific pursuits. And I think people listening probably have that with other relationships in their lives, that you each bring to each other that very special thing where you can lean in because he's telling you something, or he can lean into you. And, you know, I think that's a beautiful aspect of this, certainly as a witness to it.
Yeah, it's a big world. You can't cover it by yourself.
Yeah.
You got to have friends.
But you have to have friends who also know you, all of you. You know, we learn about each other and we are friends in certain areas, but it isn't a complete portrait it's an incomplete portrait because there's so much about both of you that you both know from a very young age, this cellular growth that has occurred, so that you can all both go off and do your separate things.
Well, Jamie, there's another piece of this, which is that, I mean, I'm just jamming with you guys, but there's something about my relationship with Chris, it's kind of molecular in the mm-hmm. sense that I've known his molecules since he just barely had them.
And how are they doing?
Before they drop.
And I can, when every time I look at him, I superimpose about 10 images of him at different ages. Fairly vivid images of him at 8 jumping on a basketball and being able to stand up and what his face looked like of him playing guitar.
I'm sorry, he can jump on a basketball?
You put the basketball on the floor. I hate to say this, but, you know, and then he could just jump on top of it. And most people go, you know, it would be the Dick Van Dyke Show, you know.
Oh, boom, I see. Yeah. You know, and he could. Right.
Yeah, that's right. And he would invite other people who lived in his household to try it, and with not good effect, including me, probably, let's say. So Chris was agile, but I can visualize him at different stages of his life because I've seen him at different stages of his life. So it's and yet the current iteration is always superimposed right on top of it. So I'm looking at a molecular evolving situation there that I'm pretty intimate with in terms of the at least the visual aspect of it. And I don't have anybody else like that. You know, I go back, the oldest other friends I have go back to about 20.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I don't know anybody now. It's my sister. That's all. The same thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
And we're now getting to an age where we're saying goodbye to a lot of our friends. That is the new sort of door that we our generation of post-60s. Yeah.
Death is the new black.
Well, it's also more of a trap door than a door. But yeah, and that's true. And Dave and I are virtually the same age. Jamie's younger by 10 years. But that's another thing. As you look ahead, I just, in terms of describing your mathematical age to people, I always looked at it as a baseball diamond that, you know, you start out as a baby and you could say you're at bat. And if you're middle-aged, you're on second base. And someone said, "Where are you now?" to me. And I said, "I'm caught in a rundown between third and home." And the catcher has the ball, by the way. So,
Caught in a Rundown, by the way, is a very good song title.
It is.
So that's, and that changes the perspective of friendship, too, when you're looking at everything in a slightly different way. If you're in your early 20s, even early 30s, you're not looking at things the same way, and this is different. Yeah.
You know, Jamie, there's one other piece, which is Chris's mom was the closest to my mom energetically in a lot of ways. They're both very active in the theater world and in the entertainment world. They're both kind of, you know, business entertainment people. I used to visit Pushy, you know, Chris's mom, out because she lived out here near East Hampton, and I hung with her. I don't have that many friends from that generation that I actually hung out with, and it reminded me of being with my mom, who's long gone. And so when Pushy left, I thought, there goes that generation. That there's nobody to verify any of the stories that he and I are telling about the days before we remember what was happening. They're gone. Nobody can verify.
And that's the honestly, that's the reason I don't, makes me cry to say it, but I don't ask Chris to participate in my creative life, this being part of it, because our penumbra is so rich and satisfying that I don't need to kind of go out into that other realm, you know. But I asked you guys to do this with me today. I don't ask you both to do things. I wouldn't ask normally Chris to come on my podcast and talk. But you see, your relationship, your long friendship is something I think people want to hear about, because as Chris just said with the, you know, caught in the rundown, it's such a reality of all of our lives. And we're all navigating it with grace and some humor, I hope, and some expansion, but that you guys really do and will always have this. And as you said, this, you've known each other really molecularly, and it will go all the way to when you're not around. And not that I wanted to have you guys on the podcast, because you guys aren't going to be around. It'd be so nice for people to be able to listen. But yeah. I wanted that because it's an example. You know, this is a podcast about good friendship, and what that means, and How does that manifest? Do you have any parting thoughts, Mr. Guest?
I don't know if I could sum all of this up. I'm glad we got to talk, but I don't know if I could sum it all up. That would be a big task, I think.
I know that the people who have been listening to the Good Friend podcast will identify with their oldest friend, their friend they made when they were very young. Maybe the parents brought them together. Maybe they found music together or tennis, you know, whatever it is. And then they have now grown into adult people and have kind of come back and forth into each other's lives the way you guys have. And maybe they're, you know, rounding third and heading for home also. And
they should slide. That's the only thing. They should make sure they slide into home.
Okay. But I'm grateful on behalf of the listeners of the Good Friend podcast. I am grateful that you guys would take some time to explore this. Old friends, old good friends. And I love you both. Good Friend is produced by Dylan Fagan and is a production of iHeartRadio. Our theme song, Good Friend, is written, produced, and performed by Emily King.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.